Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and to the fastest growing segment of our society. To those who know, as I have come to know, that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, working against our interests, and they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to expose those who are working against our interests, to understand why they are doing so, to know what it portends for our future. Ultimately, exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. Even when they're religious, it's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which, as our listeners know, means teaching, not law, because its liberating and empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. There is no reason to engage in politics or to try to change your country, wherever you may live. And we have listeners in South Africa, throughout Europe, South America, the United States, of course, New Zealand, Australia, and Canada. And I can tell all of you that there isn't a single country now which can be salvaged, and some are far worse than others. America leading the pack right now in terms of doing things that are antagonizing God. And rather than waste time trying to resolve these institutions, we're far better off coming to understand what they're doing so that we can effectively expose and condemn them, encourage other peoples to walk away from them, to no longer be dependent upon them, and then spend their time trying to come to know Yahweh, trying to understand what He is offering via His covenant, and then choosing to engage in it. That is the best use of our time. If you'd like to participate in this voyage of discovery, of this opportunity of a lifetime, you can participate by calling 877-300-7645. It is a travesty when I hear the United States politicians, the generals, the media pundits running their mouths. Now they are saying that the right thing for us to do, America to do, is to increase our military presence with NATO and the Baltic. As if increasing military tensions is going to resolve this problem. It's going to make it worse. Now, beyond the fact that the Crimean Peninsula is an autonomous region, beyond the fact that 80% or more of those in the Crimean Peninsula are opposed to the gang coup that was perpetrated in Kiev, where a group of some 10,000 individuals throwing Molotov cocktails and firing weapons occupied and destroyed central buildings in Kiev, ultimately causing the popularly elected leader, as corrupt as he may have been, to flee. Why is it that the world thinks that in the eastern Ukraine and in the southern Ukraine, and particularly in the Crimean Peninsula, which is an autonomous region, that they should be have this gang mentality that took place in Kiev imposed on them? It's not their government. And why is it when the Russians have the authority to have 200,000 troops in the in Crimean Peninsula? In fact, of non-Navy personnel, they can have up to 25,000 there at one time, and they're considerably under that number now. Why is that viewed as an invasion? And why do we have politicians like Hillary Rotten Clinton going about saying that what Putin is doing in the Crimean Peninsula is the same as what Hitler did in Czechoslovakia? Last time I checked, Czechoslovakia was not part of Germany for centuries. The Ukraine was integrated into Russia for centuries. Last time I checked, Czechoslovakia was not a failed attempt at independence. the Ukraine is. They've not only had two revolutions in the 20 years they have existed as an independent country, they're completely and utterly bankrupt, totally dependent on the rest of the world for handouts. Our approach here is devastatingly stupid. Speaking of stupid, yesterday we talked about the United States leading the charge to destroy Israel, the state line Jerusalem. The Israeli Navy seized a ship in the Red Sea. The Red Sea, of course, is that goes along the western coast of Saudi Arabia and along the Sinai of Egypt, going through the Suez Canal into the Mediterranean. The Israeli Navy seized a ship in the Red Sea on Wednesday carrying dozens of advanced Iranian-supplied rockets that were made in Syria and intended for Palestinian terrorists in the Gaza Strip. This disclosure came as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was in the United States to press for his case for tougher international action against Iran over its disputed nuclear program and support for Islamist groups. It was also there as he was there trying to protest the United States, saying that you either surrender your country to Muslims or you will become a pariah in the United States and throughout Europe. And yesterday, as the letters crossed in the mail, we found Egypt declaring that Hamas was a terrorist organization, and it was banned in Egypt, even though the President of the United States seems to have no problem with Hamas being the popularly elected government of these mythical people known as the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, which the United States forced Israel to surrender to these Islamic terrorists. And then this. Advanced rockets. Rockets far more accurate and deadly than any that the Palestinians have so far launched at Israel, out of Gaza, en route to them. The Panamanian-flagged cargo vessel, the Klaus C, was boarded in international waters without resistance from its 17-strong crew in a complex covert operation, military spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner told reporters. You see, there is a difference between Israeli intelligence and the rest of the world, particularly America. Israelis know that the 1.5 billion Muslims that surround them seek their destruction and will consider it a badge of honor to die in the process of aiding and abetting the elimination of Israel. And so intelligence isn't a game to them. It isn't something they try to bribe bad guys to squeal on other bad guys to gather intelligence. It isn't something that they simply rely on infringing on everyone's privacy like the United States does. They actually embed Israelis in these terrorist organizations. So they know precisely what is happening. Lerner said that dozens of M302 rockets were found aboard the Colossi, a weapon which could have struck deep into Israel from Gaza and would have significantly enhanced the firepower of the Islamic terrorists under Hamas's control. The M302, in its most advanced model, can strike over 100 miles. And if they would have reached Gaza, ultimately that would have meant millions of Israelis under threat. In fact, all of Israel under threat. Hamas dismissed the Israeli announcement as, quote, a silly joke. It's no joke, folks. Why is it that we can't put the pieces together? Why is it there isn't a politician or a general that seems to have any understanding? Why is it that the FBI and the CIA and the NSA are so oblivious to the obvious? If, in addition to Gaza, Israel is forced to sacrifice the West Bank, it will not survive without God's direct interaction. And if God has to interact, which he's going to do, to save the promised land, you can be assured that those who made it vulnerable will not fare well. This is a new Israeli lie, Hamas said, to justify and prolong the blockade of Gaza. Hamas Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh said. Okay, the rockets are a lie. There was no immediate comment from Iran or Syria. Military footage showed the Israeli Navy Chief Admiral Ram Rothberg inspecting a rocket on the floor of the ship's hold with cement bags labeled Made in Iran in English next to it. Lerner said that the rockets were flown from Syria to Iran, where they were shipped first to Iraq and then towards Sudan. Think of that now. Because the United States invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran, Iran no longer has a foe apart from the Sunnis now that wish to destroy it in this proxy war. Iran was able then to provide these weapons inside of Iraq and then ship them on to the Sudan, which is probably the most ruthless Islamic country on earth. Had they reached the African coast, they would have been smuggled overland through Egypt and the Sinai, which is now controlled almost exclusively by Hamas, into Gaza. Nick Jensen-Jones, an Austria-based military arms specialist and director of the Armament Research Services, indicated that the Syrian-produced rockets had a 100-kilometer range. Several Israeli assessments of these rockets have questioned their reliability, he said. Hezbollah has made use of these rockets, and Hamas is believed to be attempting to stockpile these longer-range systems. But it's just a silly joke. You ought not worry about it. Just rest peacefully, knowing that Muslims can't be trusted, knowing that Muslims seek the utter destruction of not only Israel, but of all Islamic nations. Rest peaceful. Your government is doing the right thing. Dateline Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain said Wednesday that they have recalled their ambassadors from Qatar. In the clearest move yet, underscoring their apparent displeasure over Doha's support for Islamist Muslim Brotherhood's group in Egypt and elsewhere in the region. This is really an interesting move because Saudi Arabia, along with Qatar, were the primary financial backers of the Muslim Brotherhood. Once the Muslim Brotherhood came to power, Egypt was almost instantly bankrupt. And the United States and Europe did not want to increase their charity, which is billions of dollars a year. And the United States primarily gives weaponry to support the armed army of Egypt as opposed to politically based funds. And so to prop up this Islamist government there, Saudi Arabia and Qatar were the largest underwriter, billions upon billions of dollars. Well, the problem, of course, is that while Saudi Arabia is a fundamentalist Islamic country, and while Abdullah now is, King Abdullah, is a fundamentalist, far more fundamentalist than his predecessors, and not only do they fund and build most fundamentalist Islamic mosques around the world, those that are spewing Islamic jihadism, they themselves are petrified of fundamentalist Islamic jihadists. They're petrified of the Muslim Brotherhood. And the reason is that the way that fundamentalist Muslims work is that they always view any government that they don't control as a government that's not Islamic enough. You know, in the Quran, you're either a jihadist or you're not a Muslim. And if the Sauds are only promoting jihadist terrorist acts via the mosques indirectly, as opposed to sending jihadists around the world to terrorize mankind, they're not considered nearly Islamic enough by fundamentalist Muslims. They get this definition from the 8th and 9th surahs of the Quran. So the Saudi Arabians are happier to have the Muslim Brotherhood control Egypt, but they're not happy when the Muslim Brotherhood inspires terrorist organizations inside Saudi Arabia, and so they are now opposed to what they previously have done. But this puts them in a very unique situation, a difficult situation, because Saudi Arabia, along with Qatar, is the primary supplier of weaponry in the proxy war in Syria. It's because the Saudi Arabians and Qatar collectively decided to arm the Mujahideen fighting the Assad regime because of the gain in influence of Shiite Islam through Syria as a result of America's invasion of Iraq. They are doing that together. And so to say, you know, we're not going to talk to you anymore because of your support for the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, but we're going to be the source of arms for this gargantuan proxy war that we have created in Syria. I don't know how that works. It sounds like, you know, you're cutting off your nose in spite of your face. And the only thing that is promising about this is the recognition that the timing of the events that the 17th chapter of Yashega Isaiah present relative to the Syrian war and then the divestiture of Israeli land leading to a harvest of saved souls and then an all-out Islamic assault of Israel, that the timing of those events is such that they all happen in very quick succession. And I think we are 10 years, maybe even 12 years away from that succession of events, which means that the Syrian civil war needs to play out for a while longer for these events to all follow each other in quick succession. Well, one way for that to occur, recognizing that the Sunni jihadists outman the Shias 4-1 and outgun them 10-1, is for those supplying the weapons to get into a squabble, just as the other way to throttle it back is to have the Sunnis start killing other Sunnis, as they're doing currently in Syria. And so in this breakup of communications between Qatar and Saudi Arabia, with those two nations being the largest supplier of munitions to terrorists, we're seeing another throttling mechanism. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. We have Glenn on the line. Welcome, Glenn. What have you to say this fine day?
Hello, Yada. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good morning, whatever it is. Good afternoon for me.
Correct.
I called primarily to address the concept of plausible deniability goings on relative to Ukraine and Crimea and stuff.
Okay.
But before I do that, I'd like to make a passing mention of your Debka file story about the captured ship and missiles.
The silly joke.
What's that?
The silly joke.
Well, I'm trying to figure out why a Persian-speaking people manufacturing missiles for an Arabic-speaking people were made in Iran in English on their cartons. Almost seems Bugs
Bunny-ish. The reason is that, and having been a importer and manufacturer, international manufacturer of goods, the international trade and tariffs code requires that the country of origin be presented in a certain way, in a certain size, in English on on any goods that are being exported and imported. And in this particular case, it wasn't the missiles that had made in Iran on it. It was sacks of cement that were beside the missiles that had made in Iran. Yeah, made in Iran on it. But that, yeah. They have to be written. Yeah, they have to be written in English. If there wasn't labeling in English, they're not importable and not exportable. Or importable, according to international trade.
Oh, well, Lord knows we wouldn't want to break international commerce law.
Of course.
When we're smuggling other contraband missiles.
Okay, yeah, you got me there. Caught me there. I can at least explain why the English is there. I can't argue with that and won't even make an attempt to. Yes.
Now, about the Ukraine.
Yes.
I was trying to figure out last week why the Russian tanks and trucks going into Crimea had no red stars, no labels, no markings on them of any kind.
Uh-huh.
The other shoe dropped on that this morning for me when I saw a story where the Russian heads of their defense administration, their defense agency, was asked about ordering the troops back to their bases. Mm-hmm. And he said with a slightly sly smirk on his face, mm-hmm. Well, I can't order them back to their bases. They're right. Russian. They're not Russian. They're
right.
defense forces.
Right, right.
And that explains why they were unlabeled vehicles, because now
right.
they can simply say, well, they're Crimean forces.
Yeah, and the fact is that the Crimean Peninsula is an independent region, and it is not a wholly integrated into the Ukraine. So the Russians have the authority to have tens of thousands of Russian troops in Crimea without it being an invasion. It's interesting that there are a considerable number of Russians who are not in the Russian military, who are armed and uniformed in the Crimean Peninsula. And this should not be surprising, because the Crimean Peninsula is an autonomous region. And when they responding to what happened in Kiev, because what happened in Kiev, which was a gang overthrow of an elected government, they said, we don't want any part of that. And so they made it clear that the Ukrainian flag representing those now who had overthrown the government that they had elected, that they would have no say in the Crimean Peninsula. And therefore, those people who did that, who were wearing those black uniforms with no insignias, they were Crimean citizens. It wasn't Putin doing this. Yes.
Well, Debka file says they're Russian special forces. But the point is, even so, they could view them as being employed in a special role, like UN Blue Helmets or something. You know?
Yeah. I don't even know if there are Russian special forces, or if they are, in fact, as they claim to be, Crimean forces. They're homegrown Crimean forces as an autonomous region. It makes perfect sense that they, therefore, would not be wearing the Russian Federation flag.
Well,
and they're not.
And certainly the absence of markings creates plausible deniability, which the Russians are thinking, hey, if you guys can maintain plausible deniability by laundering your money and arms through proxies when you send it to all these coup people around the world, then we can launder our influence through unmarked uniforms and vehicles.
Yeah, let me just give you a scenario. Let's just say that that tomorrow Texans go into Austin. And they, a few thousand of them, decide that in Austin that they are going to burn buildings and throw Molotov cocktails and shoot at law enforcement, and then they're going to ultimately throw out any American backed influence in Austin, and that they're going to declare that they have now won a popular coup to take over the government. Do you think that the United States is going to say, you know, that's just swell, guys. I think the whole world's going to say the Texans have spoken. We need to respect the Texans' autonomy. The United States has no right to deploy its troops. Even the fact that the United States has bases like Fort Hood just north of Austin. No, they need to stand down. I mean, that's basically what we're asking the Russians to do.
Or better yet, a fascist rabble takes over Canada, and their new ostensible leader goes into Quebec and tells Montreal they can't speak French anymore.
That's what we're talking about here. And the prize here, if you will, the prize, is a absolute destitute and grotesquely immoral population. I mean, they have absolutely and completely failed at this independence game because they're unwilling to work. They're wholly dependent on other nations providing handouts. And as a result of that, whoever claims them is going to be burdened by them. I mean, the Ukrainians are better off. The world is better off. America is better off. Europe is better off if Russia were to take over this problem.
Those who take the mainland get to deal with having Chernobyl to deal with.
Yes.
And they get the arable land, but they have to deal with farming and irrigation and all that stuff.
Even the arable land. There, at one time, the Ukraine was called the breadbasket of the USSR. They reached a point where they were a leading producer of grain crops, of wheat, of barley, and of corn. But now, two-thirds of what they produce is not fit for human consumption. And it's sold as animal fodder. And so,
is that because of the degradation of the soil or poor farming practices or what?
They claim that it's a combination of three things. The most detailed report is a very long PDF you can read online that analyzes all of the issues regarding the mismanagement of Ukraine following their claim of independence. But it's basically three things. A very poor farming practices and extraordinarily counterproductive interference from the government in Kiev, and what the result is that when land was privatized from being collectivized, that the folks that took control of it became oligarch and oligarchic corporations, where the desire to do the right thing, you know, to being a farmer is tough. That's a tough job, and the devotion necessary to do the job well does not exist under these oligarchic corporations. And so the product that they're shipping is bug ridden. The grain kernels are broken, and it has all sorts of parasites that they're shipping along with it, which means that there's some countries that don't even want it now as animal fodder because it's too likely to infect domestic crops.
That's interesting, considering that our agribusiness corporate heads say that farming is too important to be handled by farmers.
Yeah.
Now those who would believe that there are already tens of thousands of not troops on American soil ready to overthrow the government and kill Americans, say that Russia's already in cahoots with the globalists, and this is just a Hegelian dialectical balkanization of the Ukraine, putting it into dividing and conquer.
I don't buy it.
I'm just saying it's out there.
Glenn, I'm going to put you on hold, and it's not because of anything you've said. You were wonderful again in your contribution to the program, but the quality of your phone is so garbled now that it's difficult to hear. I had a conversation with Aaron, who produces this show, before we went on the air today and during the commercial break, about conspiracy theories and how the conspiracists are trying to position this and everything else that's happening in the world as being manipulated by a handful of people. It just isn't so. The danger of what we're witnessing is that most people are speaking and acting and lashing out without first coming to understand the history of the place. And That's why when this first happened and I heard this term pogrom used in reference to what we were witnessing in the bonfires and the burnings of buildings in Kiev, we took several hours just to discuss the history of the pogroms. And then when there was this threat of Russia taking control of Crimea, and it appeared that they would also take control of the eastern Ukraine and control the area surrounding this pipeline, we took the time to understand where that pipeline runs. We discussed what nations it provides energy to, what the global interconnections are between these things. We also, when we were told that this was all happening because one leader was the puppet of Putin, and the people in the square represented a desire to unify with Europe, we took the time to understand what the truth was, which is that these people have bankrupted their country. They are totally dependent. They need $35 billion worth of debts just to resolve their current debt crisis. And this really is an issue of the West has loaned them money three times in the past, and they've welched on the deal all three times. And the terms that the Russians offered in terms of loans were much more favorable than the terms that the International Monetary Fund offered. You know, it's easy to understand if you try. Over the past couple of years, I've repeatedly said that spending a lot of time trying to oppose gay marriage, as Tea Partyists and a lot of Republicans do to endear themselves with their voters, is a complete waste of time. And I said it's a complete waste of time, no matter what your views are on homosexual unions, because of what's happening in classrooms today. Over the past 20 years or more, homosexual rights, the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender agenda has become a cause celeb in academia. Professors and staffers in universities are evaluated by their peers based upon how assertive they are on promoting this kind of diversity and encouraging not only the acceptance of gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, who knows what other descriptive terms we should use, but promoting it as a cause, as a noble cause, as a societal good. And so someone who has been subject to that through school, because it's a big part of the curriculum, middle school, high school, and up through college, comes out with a parroting what they have been told repeatedly, and what they've either had to embrace or be ostracized. And, you know, there's nothing worse for a child at that age to be ostracized. You either embrace it and are accepted, or you dare say anything else, and you will be condemned, crucified, ostracized, labeled, and demeaned. And so the obvious realization was that we were fast approaching a time when the vast majority of young people would be not only accept homosexual marriage, they would encourage it, that they would be supportive of it, think it's a grand idea. And therefore, in a democracy, which, by the way, is mob rule, this is a lose-lose scenario. You have no chance to prevail. You know, for a while, conservatives were prevailing at the ballot box and then losing with judges. And now we have reached a point where it's the overwhelming percentage of Americans will vote down any attempt to make marriage between a man and a woman. this announcement in today's news. Half of all Americans believe that gay men and lesbians have a constitutional right to marry, according to a new Washington Post ABC News poll, in which a large majority also said that businesses should not be able to deny serving gays for religious reasons. That came out of the Arizona case where a photographer said that he did not want to be responsible for the photography memorializing a homosexual wedding. 50% of the court said that he did not have that option, that he had no rights in that regard. 50% say that the U.S. Constitution's guarantees for equal protections gives gays the right to marry, while 41% says that it does not. Beyond the constitutional questions, a record high 59% say that they support same-sex marriage, while 34% are opposed, the widest margins tracked by a post-ABC polling. What's actually happened here is that the numbers amongst those who have recently graduated or in the process of being indoctrinated in America's institutions are coming out overwhelmingly in support of all of the ideals of political correctness. And therefore, this is a battle that was lost in the classroom decades ago. And why Republicans continue to fight it baffles me, because there is a 0% chance of prevailing. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the commercial break. We're going to turn our attention, as we did yesterday, to one of the most powerful prophecies in all of the Torah prophets and Psalms, one that describes specifically what is happening and what's going to happen in Syria and how that's going to ultimately manifest itself in world war.